Thank you, Matt. I will say that G3 could hardly qualify as a mega journal. When you see our publication statistics, maybe in a year from now we will meet that criteria. But for now, we are just getting going. So I want to give you a little background on the Genetic Society of America. We were founded in 1931. It's a membership society. We have around 5,000 members, and most of the emphasis is on model organisms. So that's things like worms, yeast, flies, population and evolutionary genetics. And I just have our mission statement up there so you can see a little bit about what the society stands for. And we have a number of diverse missions, including promoting interactions among geneticists. We sponsor a series of very successful meetings each year, and they're model organism specific. So it might pull together yeast researchers, Drosophila researchers, mouse, etc. We work to educate students and the public. We're based in Washington, so we have a large advocacy component, and we advocate for funding of research in genetics. And we address policy-related issues for our members and researchers. We publish two peer-reviewed, peer-edited journals, Genetics, which is our flagship journal, and that was founded in 1916, and the newest, G3, which is our new open-access journal, and that was just launched, actually, in June. As a society publisher, and I'm really happy to speak with you today. I'm hoping that you'll have some ideas for me also, because as a society publisher, we have many missions and goals and a diverse group of constituents to satisfy. We've got the board of directors, which is important to consider because the journals provide the entire operating budget for the society. So all those activities that you saw, the model organism meetings, membership, advocacy, depends on the money coming in from the journal, historically from genetics. So that's really where all of our money goes. So it's important, that function is very important to the mission of the society. If we sink, they're in trouble. The members want things like discounts on page charges. They want us to represent the field and to advocate for them. The authors, of course, have lots and lots of wants. And expectations, as do readers and libraries, and of course the scientific community. We also are responsible to communities like the open access community, because many of our authors have asked us for open access. We've in our surveys and talks and meetings, they've said, look, we want open access, and this is part of why we have launched G3. And because genetics and genomics is such a data-heavy field, we have a lot of folks interested in data mining. Again, G3 is a good fit for that. So I want to explain a little bit about how a society that has historically a subscription-based model of its journals decided to launch a fully open-access journal. So genetics has been evolving, and there was a confluence of events that really led to the creation of G3. We went online only in 2010. It's primarily a basic science journal, so we do not receive a lot of revenue from advertising, nor is our print version, was it used heavily. So we felt that, and we did a lot of research and felt that it would be okay to go online. And libraries did not seem to mind either. And it turns out that after we went online, we expected subscription attrition and all these problems, and nothing happened. So we went online only, it was fine. We offered authors an open access choice. At first there was no uptake. Now we have about 20%. We're reasonably priced at $1,200 US, and that covers some industry folks or maybe welcome their organizations who want to be open access immediately. We do have online ahead of print, the sort of old paradigm, in which as soon as your paper is accepted, we publish your manuscript unedited online within a week. So they have that DOI. So genetics, well, historically it is a subscription-based model. It does have some very progressive components of it that lean toward an OA model. Our entire archive, dating back to 1916, is free. And the journal itself is free after 12 months. So that's genetics. But what happened is we were getting to be as big as a phone book. We're publishing 60 articles a month, and we had a reputation for being archival. And when a new editor-in-chief came on board in 2008, the scope statement was changed, and the journal reorganized to basically, make publication in genetics a more significant achievement. So it became more difficult to get a paper published in genetics. And also we were recognizing that our authors were saying, look, your impact factor is not high enough. We want to publish there, but because of pressure from tenure committees and promotion committees, we need to have a higher impact factor. Because half of the journal was population and evolutionary genetics, those papers tend to have a very long half-life, upwards of 10 years. It takes them a while, though, to get cited. So they were not helping our impact factor. So we changed our scope statement, and we went from publishing about 600 articles a year and 7,300 pages in 2007 to last year 348 articles and 4,200 pages. The rejections led to a significant number of very unhappy and confused authors. That says, this is a very important book. In fact, it's too important to publish. At the same time, the GSA valued agility and responsiveness in our publication strategy. And we knew that we had to both help our disenfranchised authors and potential authors who were rejected and give them a place to publish that was within our storehouse of journals. At the same time, our younger readers and authors told us that they want OAA, that they wanted us to be more progressive. Now, Society Journals, as a non-for-profit, non-commercial publisher, are generally recognized as the good guys, and we wanted to be responsive and to stay that way. We were largely inspired by the success of PLOS and Biomed Central. We have a lot of our academic editors who are also editors within journals of those organizations. And we felt that those models, particularly the PLOS One model, worked well for them, and something like that could work for us too. So I won't go through the sort of whole politics and the creation of a new journal, but basically, you know, we approached the board of directors, the publications committee approached the board of directors in 2010 with a proposal. And many, many steps later, in June of 2011, G3 was launched. It is fully open access. It has a somewhat of a more hierarchical structure than, say, PLOS One. We have an editor-in-chief. We have subject section editors and about 73 associate editors who handle the review of papers. It is monthly. For now, it's monthly. We're hoping to get to continuous, but we really need to pick up the volume a little in order to make that viable. We have a Creative Commons attribution license. If we're going to be open access, we want it to really be open access. Take the data, see what you can do with it. So we'll see how that turns out. We only average, as I say, the mega journals term is loosely describes G3. We're averaging 8 articles a month. That's it right now. Okay, so here's our mission statement, and basically the idea is the data sets must be high quality, they should be useful. We seek to rapidly disseminate the information that will lead to mechanistic insight. So in order to be published, your paper doesn't need to have mechanistic insight. We won't turn it away if it does, but it doesn't necessarily have to. So this model probably sounds familiar to you all by now, right? And there are some genetic-specific kinds of papers that we look at. And again, we provide true open access, which means unfettered access to the raw data. If you submit a paper and you are a cattle breeder, for example, and you will not turn over the raw data to us, we reject the paper and that's it. Genetics has the same policy. That's just the way that it is. And unfortunately, we do have to turn away some authors, but Without the data behind it, we have no way of verifying whether the claims are true. So we hope that G3 will strengthen the position of genetics also in the GSA as a publisher. Now, is acceptance a foregone conclusion? No, it has to be good science. Here's some of our criteria. That the experiments must be high quality, well-described, reasonably interpreted. And this is a little bit the same kind of thing that Pete Binfeld talked about, right? Is that these journals are not simply, you know, a dumping ground that we accept everything, that we do have fairly, you know, high standards, and that's part of our mission and responsibility. So in a very, very competitive arena of publishing, specifically in genomics and genetics, we want to look at like what the strengths are. Now, we think that the Creative Commons license is a strength, although I will say that the authors themselves don't seem to understand the distinction between the kinds of licenses. Even open access, they don't really know. They know they want it and that they should want it, but they don't always know what it means. Just like impact factor. We did a survey and we asked, well, how many of you know how it's calculated? And it was dismal, the number who actually did. But they know higher is better, right? And in the same way, they know open access is good, but they don't really know why. So part of our mission, I think, should be to educate them as well on beyond sort of the buzzword, why this is beneficial to them. We link to genes and objects in our model organism databases. We started that project. This sort of is a little bit of echoes of a Beyond the article that we heard yesterday that we do this with genetics, and I'll show you an example also with G3. We strive for fast turnaround. We're a little bit over 30 days to first decision. We are hoping to whittle that down even further. It's really important. We need to compete. Right now we have no impact factor. We're not even indexed yet in PubMed Central because of its requirements. So that will take a while. So we really need to offer the authors some other incentives. I will say that we are peer edited and peer reviewed. I mean, peer reviewed goes without saying, but peer edited, that we do still have academic editors who do offer feedback on the papers. And there's just an example I wanted to show you of, I don't think I have a pointer. If you can see the terms, the gene names that are highlighted in blue, well, in both the PDF and the full text XML version, the authors can click on the text, and they're taken directly to a model organism database. In this case, this is SGD, the yeast database. And there, you know, it becomes more of a learning tool for them. So if they want, they can look at other resources related to that gene or object. And so we've been working at promoting that concept, and it's a pretty innovative. Okay, our business model. We're an author pays publication fees. GSA members have a slightly lower fee than non-members. It is all inclusive, meaning that, you know, there's no extra charges for data supplements. No limits on pages or color. However, this may change in terms of the supplemental materials because we're finding that we're getting very data-heavy papers and it costs a lot to store 50 gigs of data for a paper. So we may have to tweak that. So, we don't have submission charges or institutional memberships. As with genetics, only the editor-in-chief receives a small stipend, and all the other editors and reviewers are volunteer. Now, to succeed, we have to get a significant volume of articles published each month. The minimum is 25. And I really, I mean, this is part of the challenge, my challenge, sort of straddling the editorial and the business side. As it stands, you know, if we do not publish a certain number of articles, then, you know, we will lose money and we will not be able to sustain ourselves. The growth in manuscript submissions is slow, but it's steady. Are we sustainable? That's the bottom line. And as you continue to see more journals like G3 pop up, I think it will be really interesting to see, you know, how these journals grow or not. We can only hope to have the same problems as PLOS One has experienced. It is an experiment and a bit of a risk, and the risk for us really is very much financial. As our institutional subscriptions decline, as you all know, libraries' budgets are shrinking and shrinking, and we have a rate of attrition that's fairly standard within the subscription-based model for genetics. And we think that it is likely that genetics, too, will have to go open access, within, say, 5 to 7 years. But because our institutional subscriptions make up 75% of the revenue for genetics, we would have to charge authors twice what we charge them now in page charges to make up for that loss. So, I mean, the society itself needs to diversify and find additional revenue streams. For now, though, my bailiwick is the publication side. So, really, we're depending on G3 to be sustainable. So there are a lot of lessons we've learned already, and I was trying to be optimistic. I had this much on the plus side and 4 pages on the negative side, so I trimmed down the negative and tried to expand on the plus side. The editorial board was relatively easy to populate. The composition's broad and deep. Geneticists are good people, and they want to help, and they want to be part of things. So we found that we did have, a lot of people said yes. Now, when it came time to handle a paper, occasionally we would get the, well, I thought I was just on the masthead. So there is that. We do have a slight economy of scale in using publishing partners from genetics. And again, we're a small society, and so we represent, I think, a lot of other kinds of organizations like us. Determining policies and procedures was fairly straightforward because we had just reorganized genetics, and so from the ground up we had written policies for the editors, and so that was straightforward from my point of view. And we have a nice natural audience that includes members of the GSA and meeting attendees and so on, with whom we've built a relationship over time. Genetics has been around since 1916, and so we have a fairly good reputation, and so we could rely on that to help leverage this brand as well. So far, authors are happy and the papers seem interesting. The challenges. Finding the right editor-in-chief took about 6 months, and it had a trickle-down effect with the delay of everything else happening. I think one of the challenges is that we were late arriving to this market. Even though you see now all of these new journals are popping up, I really think because of the way genetic scope changed and the natural, both the rejections from genetics and the opportunity for other papers from other areas, I feel like we entered the market probably a year and a half later than we would have liked. Okay. Time sinks, legal, education, PubMed Central, you name it, there have been unexpected issues coming up. I think what I want to say, I guess the two things I want to emphasize, and we've heard about this a little bit today, but the cultural shift for the authors and the editors and the reviewers is this kind of review is not a review for genetics. But still, we get many, many letters that reviews, which seem like they're reviewing the paper for a journal with much more stringent standards. And so for now, it's taking a lot of education and time, really, to move through the editorial process. Marketing and branding is always a challenge. With the proliferation of open access journals and competition, there's a lot of noise, and it makes it difficult to be heard. I just want to show you some of the reviewers' comments to show you at the granular level the kind of things that we, have had to deal with. The paper is appropriate for G3, but it may take some major revisions to do justice to blah, blah, blah. The second one basically saying that the authors should further interrogate their valuable data set with this, which may yield important discovery. And again, they just can't help themselves, the reviewers. They cannot help themselves. This one, it would not do a service to the authors or G3 to publish this in its present form. There is large room for improvement. The audience potential is limited. not what we really want to know. So we are looking for maybe doing a more template-based review system. And this is not to say that, you know, we are not interested in what they have to say, but in some ways it is an efficient rate for them to give us 20 pages of a detailed review when that's not what we're looking for. Many of these are challenges are integral to launching any new journal. But I just, sort of thinking of the audience here, I just want to emphasize that, you know, we're very much interested in open access, moving genetics that way, and really having G3 be a success. And so for you, I think, I hope that, you know, I'm getting a lot of good ideas already from this conference. And I think that the next 3 to 6 months, we just need to continue heavy promotion of the journal to OA communities like yourselves. And outreach events, appeal to data mining applications, which we really want to see how the open access is used. You know, let's see what you can do with this data. Educate key players in genetics and genomics, and continuing to find technology partners who will help us extend that article beyond the PDF. Right now, our vendor is not exactly positioned to provide us with the kind of features that we really think the authors want. The bottom line, the lessons learned for you all to consider is that the perception that publishing programs of scientific societies do not have as much stake in the bottom line as others. Spark had a discussion of business models online that I looked, and they said, well, scientific societies don't have to be concerned about their publishing bottom line. Yes, yes, we do. And not only that, but I mean, my bottom line is the whole entire society's activities. So it's pretty important. So it has to be sustainable. There's no blueprint available right now for launching a new journal, or in particular, the many flavors of OA. So we had a lot of startup time, I think, trying to wade through the literature and figure out what, if there even was something called best practice in this arena. Again, most authors want it, but they don't know really what it means. Well, why do we want OA? Does it mean more citations? Does it mean more impact? It differs by field, as you know, but these are just some things, some educational areas to consider. We have to show them ways their work has impact. Of course, we're interested in gold, not green OA, and scholars like best practices, and largely societies like mine are run by scholars and academics. They like to be shown the way and shown examples. And for OA to succeed, really, it has to be economically sustainable. And editorially as well. So that's it. Now my welcome questions or collaboration. So I'll be at dinner if you guys want to chat. To a model organism database. In this case, this is SGD, the yeast database. And there, you know, it becomes more of a learning tool for them. So if they want, they can look at other resources related to that gene or object. And so we've been working at promoting that concept. And it's pretty innovative. Okay, our business model. We're an author pays publication fees. GSA members have a slightly lower fee than non-members. It is all inclusive. Meaning that, you know, there's no extra charges for data supplements, no limits on pages or color. However, this may change in terms of the supplemental materials, because we're finding that we're getting very data-heavy papers, and it costs a lot to store 50 gigs of data for a paper. So we may have to tweak that. So, we don't have submission charges or institutional memberships. As with genetics, only the editor-in-chief receives a small stipend, and all the other editors and reviewers are volunteer. Now, to succeed, we have to get a significant volume of articles published each month. The minimum is 25. And I really am, this is part of the challenge, my challenge, sort of straddling the editorial and the business side. As it stands, you know, if we do not publish a certain number of articles, then, you know, we will lose money and we will not be able to sustain ourselves. The growth in manuscript submissions is slow, but it's steady. Are we sustainable? That's the bottom line. And as you continue to see more journals like G3 pop up, I think it will be really interesting to see, you know, how these journals grow or not. We can only hope to have the same problems as PLOS One has experienced. It is an experiment and a bit of a risk, and the risk for us really is very much financial. As our institutional subscriptions decline, as you all know, libraries' budgets are shrinking and shrinking, and we have a rate of attrition that's fairly standard within the subscription-based model for genetics. And we think that it is likely that genetics, too, will have to go open access, within, say, 5 to 7 years. But because our institutional subscriptions make up 75% of the revenue for genetics, we would have to charge authors twice what we charge them now in page charges to make up for that loss. So, I mean, the society itself needs to diversify and find additional revenue streams. For now, though, my bailiwick is the publication side. So, really, we're depending on G3 to be sustainable. So there are a lot of lessons we've learned already, and I was trying to be optimistic. I had this much on the plus side and 4 pages on the negative side, so I trimmed down the negative and tried to expand on the plus side. The editorial board was relatively easy to populate. The composition's broad and deep. Geneticists are good people, and they want to help, and they want to be part of things. So we found that we did have, you know, a lot of people said yes. Now, when it came time to handle a paper, we did occasionally we would get the, well, I thought I was just on the masthead. So there is that. We do have a slight economy of scale in using publishing partners from genetics. And again, we're a small society, and so we represent, I think, a lot of other kinds of organizations like us. Determining policies and procedures was fairly straightforward because we had just reorganized genetics, and so from the ground up we had written policies for the editors, and so that was straightforward from my point of view. And we have a nice natural audience that includes members of the GSA and meeting attendees and so on, with whom we've built a relationship over time. You know, genetics has been around since 1916, and so we have a fairly good reputation, and so we could rely on that to help leverage this brand as well. So far, authors are happy and the papers seem interesting. The challenges. Finding the right editor-in-chief took about 6 months, and it had a trickle-down effect with the delay of everything else happening. I think one of the challenges is that we were late arriving to this market. Even though you see now all of these new journals are popping up, I really think because of the way genetic scope changed and the natural, both the rejections from genetics and the opportunity for other papers from other areas, I feel like we entered the market probably a year and a half later than we would have liked. Okay. Time sinks, legal, education, PubMed Central, you name it, there have been unexpected issues coming up. I think what I want to say, I guess the two things I want to emphasize, and we've heard about this a little bit today, but the cultural shift for the authors and the editors and the reviewers is this kind of review is not a review for genetics. But still, you know, we get many, many letters that reviews, which seem like they're reviewing the paper for a journal with much more stringent standards. And so for now, it's taking a lot of education and time, really, to move through the editorial process. Marketing and branding is always a challenge. With the proliferation of open access journals and competition, there's a lot of noise, and it makes it difficult to be heard. I just want to show you some of the reviewers' comments to show you at the granular level the kind of things that we, you know, have had to deal with. The paper is appropriate for G3, but it may take some major revisions to do justice to blah, blah, blah. The second one basically saying that the authors should further interrogate their valuable data set with this, which may yield important discovery. And again, they just can't help themselves, the reviewers. They cannot help themselves. This one, you know, it would not do a service to the authors or G3 to publish this in its present form. There is large room for improvement. The audience potential is limited. Not what we really want to know. So we are looking for maybe doing a more template-based review system. And this is not to say that, you know, we are not interested in what they have to say, but in some ways it is an efficient rate for them to give us 20 pages of a detailed review when that's not what we're looking for. Many of these are challenges are integral to launching any new journal. But I just, sort of thinking of the audience here, I just want to emphasize that, you know, we're very much interested in open access, moving genetics that way, and really having G3 be a success. And so for you, I think, I hope that, you know, I'm getting a lot of good ideas already from this conference. And I think that the next 3 to 6 months, we just need to continue heavy promotion of the journal to OA communities like yourselves. And outreach events, appeal to data mining applications, which we really want to see how the open access is used. You know, let's see what you can do with this data. Educate key players in genetics and genomics, and continuing to find technology partners who will help us extend that article beyond the PDF. Right now, our vendor is not exactly positioned to provide us with the kind of features that we really think the authors want. The bottom line, the lessons learned for you all to consider is that the perception that publishing programs of scientific societies do not have as much stake in the bottom line as others. Spark had a discussion of business models online that I looked, and they said, well, scientific societies don't have to be concerned about their publishing bottom line. Yes, yes, we do. And not only that, but I mean, my bottom line is the whole entire society's activities. So it's pretty important. So it has to be sustainable. There's no blueprint available right now for launching a new journal, or in particular, the many flavors of OA. So we had a lot of startup time, I think, trying to wade through the literature and figure out what, if there even was something called best practice in this arena. Again, most authors want it, but they don't know really what it means. Well, why do we want OA? Does it mean more citations? Does it mean more impact? It differs by field, as you know, but these are just some things, some educational areas to consider. We have to show them ways their work has impact. Of course, we're interested in gold, not green OA. And scholars like best practices. And largely, societies like mine are run by scholars and academics. They like to be shown the way and shown examples. And for OA to succeed, really, it has to be economically sustainable. And editorially as well. So that's it. Now my welcome questions or collaboration. So I'll be at dinner if you guys want to chat.